Not Her Shot, Book 2 of MVP, Most Valuable Pack, written by Ari Wright, performed by James Cavanaugh and Brooke Daniels.
Prologue. 10 years ago. Remy. This is fine. Nothing to see here. There are a lot of things you can tell yourself if you're willing to listen. I'm not sure if the fact that I believe my own nonsense means I'm a genius convincer or a gullible loser who will believe anything. Can it be both? At the moment, I'd say I'm walking a tightrope between stupidly romantic and just plain stupid. And I'm slipping. No, literally, my foot is slipping, and if I let go of my bunk room's windowsill, someone is going to have to scrape me off the sidewalk 2 stories down. Once the sun comes up. Maybe it would have been better to do this in the daylight. Oh, but the sunrise is so much prettier than the sunset. All the soft baby pinks and violet blues and frothy clouds. My window faces a tree that blocks out most of it. I just want to see if I can glimpse the horizon, if I can climb a little higher up. Carefully planting my bare foot against a roof shingle, I rebalance the book under my left arm and size up the stretch to the closest eave. Sandpaper texture scratches my toes, while the cool morning air settles over my arms. I have to extend every muscle in my spine to reach the next ledge, carefully easing my way around the corner of the roof. I'm pretty sure if I just skirt around to the side of the house, there's a dip between 2 dormers. What are you doing here? My life flashes before my eyes in a dismal blur of government-issue grage. I startle, nearly losing my grip on the corner of the roof. Eeked! Ignoring my squawk, a big hand snatches my wrist just before I lose my balance. Are you crazy? The guy mutters. He drags me into the valley between roof segments before dropping my arm. I scramble back from him, pressing into the shingles, eyes bugging with fear. Why? He's one of the older kids in our group home, almost the shape of a man, but too gangly and full of the kind of restless fury that only comes from being caged in an orphanage. That's what happens to us, I've realized. We either grow fearful or furious. I'm afraid this guy is in the second category. I'm afraid I'm in the first. Dark brows lower over his eyes. Don't freak out, he mumbles, shifting back. I don't give a fuck why you're up here. I was just saying you're crazy. Normally, I'm mousy, sensitive, skittish. I've been called a lot of things, but never crazy. I'm typically too busy trying to follow all the rules and keep everyone happy to make much headway in the crazy department. Though I suppose climbing up onto the roof alone in the dark doesn't exactly scream sensible. A big hand waves in front of my face. Focus, butterfly. You could slide right off this thing. I realize I've totally spaced out and duck my chin, hiding the way hot blood blazes under my cheeks. Right, sorry. He shrugs his shoulder. It's massive, even in his ill-fitting hoodie. If he hasn't designated as an alpha yet, I bet he will one day soon. An oddly serene silence settles between us. 1,000 different things to say play through my head before I rewind his earlier remark, quirking my eyebrows at him. Butterfly? The first strains of dawn touch his face, barely illuminating the half-smile that twitches on his lips. He nods at my hair. Your clip? For fluff's sake. I have my oh-so-childish, completely mortifying butterfly clip nestled in my hair. It was the first thing my fingers touched when I rifled through my shoebox of accessories in the dark. I didn't want to linger and wake my roommates, so I grabbed it to hold my bangs out of my eyes while I scaled the roof. I forgot it had little springs to give it movement. Now, as I cringe, pink, sparkly wings flutter against my curls. Gads. The almost alpha keeps smirking as his eyes drop to my book. I've heard you up here the last few mornings, but I didn't realize you were hosting a book club. My giggle sounds nervous. I squash it and sniff. If it were a book club, there would be snacks. And probably other people. He leans back on his palms and shrugs again. I'm another person. I blink at him, convinced that I must be missing some sort of joke. You are. That quick, not quite a smile, twinges up again. Then I guess all we need now are snacks. Chapter 1. Remy. This is fine. Nothing to see here. Grunting, I lean back and tug on the enormous canvas bag of coffee beans blocking our aisleway. The sack inches across the floor of proper coffee while I stagger backward, using all of my strength to pull it around the bar. Good Lord. Is it time to go home yet? Nope, it's not even 8 a.m., and everyone is staring at me. Fantastic. My manager is a young beta guy who almost never looks up from his TikTok feed. His thumb rolls over the screen, hovering under his hooked nose. His voice sounds bored. You good, Remy? Me? Oh, I'm great. My hands are raw from towing big canvas bags, and my fingers are numb from the weight of the latest one, not to mention the pinch in my lower back, or the fact that I haven't taken a full breath in about 8 minutes. Yep, I pant, yanking harder. Oh, tug, good, tug. You know, given how often I conceal the truth, I really am an appallingly bad liar. How does anyone believe me? I wonder as I straighten and catch my reflection in the mirrored wall behind the espresso machine. Staring at my face, all I see are fibs. In the layer of concealer caked under my eyes, see, I'm not tired, in the cream blush blended into my two sharp cheekbones, look, I'm glowing with happiness. None of it is honest, but the smile on my lips is particularly egregious. Slicked with some sort of tingly lip-plumping gloss, wide, white, and positively thrumming with dopey, doe-eyed optimism. Pretty, though. Just like the apartment I left before dawn, I'm a collection of cleverly disguised shabbiness. Pink paint smoothed over the craggy walls, jars of fake flowers to cover water rings on my secondhand furniture, scented candles to mask the slight sourness of mildew, thin curtains and bright sunlight to fill the cracks in the ceiling. If no one ever looks too closely, I look nice, too. An innocent, big-eyed, fine-figured Omega. Whistles on the street, leering eyes across the counter at the coffee shop, phone numbers inked into receipts and drink sleeves, and, in one especially audacious case, my own wrist. Which is why I now have on the baggiest joggers I could find in my size, and an old hoodie that swallows me whole. Wouldn't want anyone to, you know, see me. And heaven forbid someone catches a whiff of my Omega-ness under the layers of de-center I spritz on each morning. I usually wear a hat, too, but that fell off somewhere back by the storage closet, and I think I might just leave it there. Not that I'm too exhausted to go grab it, which is another lie. Put it on my tab, universe. The sunshine slanting through the shop's front windows shifts from soft morning light to a harsh afternoon glare. The extra sun helps the small brick space's overall aesthetic, but it hurts my eyes a bit. Omegas tend to prefer softer lighting and dim rooms. We used to have curtains, but they were removed when the shop came under new management. Along with the handmade pastries I used to bake in the back, the comfy armchairs people used for reading, and the previous shift leader, an 80-year-old grandma called Nan. Apparently, this new company has no interest in anything soft or homey. Even grannies. I'm still sad about losing my baking outlet, aside from the occasional batch of cookies. My kitchen at home is too small to make anything worthwhile. After 4 years here, I had gotten used to using Proper Coffee's industrial kitchen for my more ambitious experiments. Now, that space is used for storing the shrink-wrapped baked goods that come in on a truck every other Thursday. I may not have any formal education, but I'm not stupid. I can see the writing on the wall. And when a group of suited-up alphas comes waltzing in, each of them squinting around the room and tapping at tablets, my stomach sinks. They're here more and more lately, which means they must not be happy with the way their investment is working out. The men march right past the counter, heading to the back of the shop. I make a face at the latte I'm preparing, silently thanking the Lord that this place still uses decent industrial scent neutralizers, so so I don't have to smell any of their alpha stink or worry about any of them scenting me. It's never been an issue before, but it's become a problem lately. Ever since I had yet another solo heat over Thanksgiving, my hormones have gone from unpleasantly insistent to downright demanding. I know I'm only 24 and everything, but I think my biological clock may be broken because its alarm has been blaring at me for months, a shrill reminder that I need things no one is giving me. Hey, sexy! I jump, whirling, and pressing a hand over my thrumming heart when I see it's my best friend Meg, grinning at me from the other side of the counter. I shake my head. We used to have a bell on the door to prevent this sort of thing. Guess that's not necessary either. What are you doing here? I hiss, whispering and glancing at the back door. I'm working. Lord, if one of these uptight alphas sees me goofing off and fires me, I'll truly be hopeless. It hasn't been easy, being an Omega on my own, with no access to education and no family support. If I lose my income, I'll be right back in the same group home situation I came from. Meg tilts her head, sending her kitschy orange heart sunglasses listing to the left. Her blonde brows snap into a frown. It's Saturday. You're coming over for dinner, right? Oh, right. Above the mirrors, our clock tells me it's well past 4. I've been here since 5 a.m. and haven't eaten a single bite of food. Maybe my stomach's seething has less to do with my agitation and more to do with not eating. Also, I was supposed to be off at 2. It would have been nice if the manager had noticed. I untie the plain black apron tied over my baggy clothes and start to slip out of my hoodie, too. It's big enough to tent me, which is exactly why I've always loved it. Underneath, though, I'm dressed for an afternoon at Meg's place. Calling it a house is like calling the Mona Lisa a painting. Really, it's more of an estate, much too modern and masculine for my taste, but still something a magazine could easily feature on its cover. Which makes sense, since all of the alphas who live there have, in fact, been on magazine covers. It's easy to forget Meg is sort of famous now. Aside from being beautiful, she doesn't even look the part. Currently, she has on a simple black bikini with a strapless romper over the top, and even though she's the center of the most famous pack in professional sports, she's still the exact same person she's always been. She picks up the hoodie with her thumb and forefinger, making a face at it. What, were they out of car covers? Her eyes light up. Where did a guy leave this at your place? I almost laugh. Ironically, I spend most nights snuggling with that old sweatshirt because there isn't anyone around to witness it. I am surprised Meg never noticed, though. I've had it for years. To be fair, I used to be fanatical about hiding it. My Omega instincts insisted we kept it tucked away in whatever makeshift nest we used that year. But lately, wearing it to work has been the only way I feel safe here. It's mine, I fib, adjusting the frilled strap of my eyelet tankini top with a shrug. I found it. The second part is not technically untrue. I did find it, one morning, sitting outside my door at the group home I used to live in. Meg probably doesn't need to know where it came from. Ever since she found her pack, she's become obsessed with finding one for me, too. Any mention of alphas, even if they're ones who no longer know I exist, sends her into matchmaking mode. I've lost track of how many times she's tried to parade me in front of her alpha's football team. Before, I might have let her. But ever since I started feeling so jumpy and needy, jeez, I can't breathe just thinking about being alone with some random pro-athlete alpha. Meg narrows her blue eyes, bending forward to skim her bottom nose over the hoodie's hem. I squash a beat of smugness, knowing she won't get anything other than my scent. Any other smells wore off a long time ago. With a sigh, my best friend sets the sweatshirt aside, already bored. One of her alphas must reach out to her through their bond. Probably Declan, if the way she rolls her eyes is any indication. She'd never dare roll her eyes at her pack's leader, Ronan. Watching her have her internal argument, I can't help but smile. It's strange. While I know I definitely want what Meg has, I can't begrudge her any of it. She's the only family I have, and I want all of this happiness for her. I just want to cry at the same time. The feeling isn't new for me. I spent years in government care, watching whichever friends I managed to make find their forever families. No one ever wanted to keep me, but I still tried to be happy for the ones who were chosen. My best friend reads my face, her own scrunching with concern. Are you okay? You look worn out. Really, I haven't slept through the night in months. My last heat left my nerves a frazzled mess, and I'm beginning to wish I could avoid the rumpled mini-nest I made for myself in the bottom of my closet. I force a bright smile. Mm-hmm. Fine. Meg's brows drop into an unimpressed glower. Remy, come on. Hey, I told you. I'm a terrible liar. Seriously, I insist, doubling down. I'm good. Let's get going before anyone notices I'm leaving. Meg narrows her eyes, pissed. Are they still being dicks? You know we can get you another job, Remy. Anything you want. You don't have to come here anymore. Irrational panic rises inside of me. I know she's right, but I also know that this is the only place in the world that's been consistent for me. I can tough it out. After all, it isn't as if I have anything else going on. I'll keep that in mind, I tell Meg, bending to gather my things from behind the counter. I tap at the iPad there, punching out and accepting all $16 of tips I earned that day. Thrilling. Declan's making dinner, Meg mutters, looping her arm through mine, so I hope you're not too hungry. I herd her toward the door, feeling antsy. I've got to get out of here. Who's driving? She knows I don't have a car, and I know she rarely chauffeurs herself these days. A peachy blush warms her face. Ronan's waiting in the rolls. Don't you mean Daddy? I tease. She snorts her denial. No? So, I may be a liar, but aren't we all? Chapter 2. Remy. I know you have no reason to believe me at this point, but I swear I'm really not a jealous person. However, watching my best friend nuzzle noses with the country's premier quarterback / heartthrob, knowing their mates, seeing the utter contentment and joy all over both of their faces, if envy turned people green, I'd resemble the lime floating in my margarita. Declan Howard lingers over Meg for a long moment before tossing her a cocky grin and standing up straight. He skirts his eyes over to me, letting a bit of chagrin into his expression, while he moves toward the grill. Sorry, Remy. Had conditioning earlier this morning and I didn't get to see Meg before I left. I wave him off, trying not to let my phony smile pull too tight. You guys are adorable, I say, then gesture around their lavish lanai. And this is your house. Meg snorts, adjusting her bikini top. Looking at her, I realize my pastel sundresses and frilly swimsuits contrast with my darker complexion every bit as much as Meg's black straps stand out against her paleness. I didn't know my parents, but the ethnic ambiguity they passed on to me created a surprising mix of traits. Brown skin, with hazily blue eyes, black hair that's curly but fine, not to mention my designation, which is rare enough on its own since only 1 in 10 people end up becoming Omegas. I'm glad you're cool with the PDA, Meg mumbles, grimacing, because I also missed Theo this morning, and if the vibes he's sending through the bond are any indication. A loud whoop cuts in as her enormous tight-end alpha tears out of their house and bolts right to her. Naked. Well, basically naked. He has boxers on, I think. But it's all sort of a muscular blur of hairy, blonde energy. Theo, don't you dare! Meg squeals as he hauls her into his thick arms and spins her in circles. It only takes 2 lumbering steps for him to reach the pool's edge, plunging them both into the aquamarine water. I watch the evening sunlight reflect on the surface, feeling all sorts of wistful. The truth is, I'm happy for my best friend. She's an incredible person who deserves all of this happiness more than anyone else I know. The truth is, I am also sick to my stomach with how much I want what she's found. It's been 8 months since she met her pack, and I've mostly moved through my negative emotions. There were times when I struggled, constantly thinking it wasn't fair. Meg never wanted alphas of her own or life as the center of a pack, yet that's exactly what she got. Whereas I always wanted my own alphas, my own family. But no one ever wanted me back. Hello, Remy. I recognize Dr. Archer Monroe's voice before I squint my eyes open and find him standing at the end of my lounge chair. Ever the respectable man of medicine, he has a layer of sunblock on his dark skin and a perfectly appropriate pair of red swim trunks to cover his lower body. The upper half remains frightfully bare. Meg is a great friend, so I doubt she's ever told her alphas that they're basically the first men I've ever seen partially naked in person. It's overwhelming for me visually, but thankfully, their bonding eliminated any possibility that I might find one of them attractive in any meaningful way. Now, whenever one of them is close enough for me to smell, I pick up on Meg's underlying signature, and my body gives a big, fat, no thank you. Smiling back at Archer, I lift my hand in a shy half wave. Hi. Why am I so awkward? Ever since Meg moved in here, visiting her feels like going to a friend's house in middle school and not knowing what I should say to her parents, especially when Ronan is around, because that alpha is all kinds of intimidating. Thank you for letting me come over, I blurt next, repressing a cringe. Lord, I even sound like a middle schooler. Always kind to a fault, Archer smiles wider. Of course. Having you here makes Meg so happy. We love that. He shuffles the books tucked under his arm and sets one at the very end of my chair, careful not to touch me. He clears his throat before fibbing. I found this extra copy in my collection upstairs. I don't need it back. He truly is a nice man. When he discovered I love to read and noticed that all of the books I brought poolside were from the local library, he began casually offering me copies of things he'd finished with. It wasn't until I found a very recent price sticker on the inside of one of their dust jackets that I realized he'd specifically bought two copies so I could have one. And it wasn't until I mentioned it to Meg that I realized she masterminded his charity. She does that sort of thing now that she can, slipping cash into my purse when she thinks I'm not looking, picking up checks for meals, buying me an absurd amount of Christmas gifts. I know she only does it because she loves me. We've shared everything with each other ever since we met. She doesn't see why her new family and their wealth should be any different. There's probably some way for me to explain how small it all makes me feel, but then she would feel bad. Plus, if the measly tips I made today are any indication, I'm not exactly in a position to turn down financial help. Archer accepts my thanks for the extra book and pulls a nearby lounger to the pool's edge. Meg and Theo chase each other around the shallow end, playing a ridiculously mushy version of Marco Polo, until Theo finally gets his arms back around her and lifts her up to his packmate. Meg situates herself against Archer's side, grinning when his lips graze her forehead. Their eyes meet in a pointed way that tells me they're communicating internally. I don't catch on to Theo's involvement until he makes a nervous coughing sound. My best friend shoots him a look. Theo, she calls, just a touch too shrill. I've been meaning to tell Remy about that thing your sister is doing. What's it called again? Despite the fact that this is clearly some rehearsed skit, the big alpha stammers for a second. It's called Forever Matched. My stomach twists at the name. A whine bubbles at the base of my throat. I stab it as quickly as I can, hoping no one heard. Archer is much better at playing along. His answering, manages to sound genuinely ponderous. I've heard of them. Very reputable scent matching service. They have the highest global success rate, if I'm not mistaken. Archer is never mistaken. Theo flips his dripping man bun off the top of his head, nodding too earnestly. That's what Emma said, like three of her sorority sisters have found packs through them. Meg fiddles with the drawstring on her Dr. Alpha's swim trunks, very carefully not looking at me. What do you think, Remy? Would you ever use a service like that? Feelings fly through me, too fast for any to sink in. There's a stab of betrayal, because of course Meg knows that a professional scent matching service is the last resort for Omegas, and a flash of dismay. I narrow my eyes at her. You know how I feel about it. I tell her prim. Besides, those services cost tens of thousands of dollars. She drags her gaze up to mine, flinching in a guilty wince. Right, but just for the sake of argument, if cost wasn't an issue, would you do it? I mean, if cost wasn't an issue, I'd be on a private jet to a spa on the Amalfi Coast. But I'm a barista. Last week, I ate microwave rice out of pouches 4 nights in a row. It's an effort not to glare. Meg, of all people, knows how hard it is to be Omega without a pack. I may not have the same heat issue she did, yet, but it still isn't fun to be in agonizing pain for days at a time and handle it all by myself. Meg knows I just went through a terrible heat over the holidays. She knows I need a pack and have always wanted to find one the old-fashioned way. Am I really so pathetic that she feels like she needs to push this on me now? I don't know, I tell her, hiding my frown behind my drink. I would have to think about it. But I know I won't. Because the fact is, what I want can't be boiled down to numbers or lab samples. I want a home, and I'm not sure there's an equation for that.
Chapter 3. Smith. We all agreed. I thought we all agreed. Monday morning, 8 a.m. But it's 8:20, and my cup is the only one on the counter. I stand there staring at it, thinking about how this is a perfect metaphor for my whole life. A sad cup of jizz. Sad because I filled it to the brim with my backed-up balls, sitting alone in the house I bought on the countertop I chose and had installed, next to my phone, which has buzzed 10 times in 4 minutes. The cup is from the clinic I selected, for the specific scent-matching company I researched, applied to, and landed a highly coveted slot with. All my work, hours and hours of it. And all these two jack-offs had to do was, well, jack-off. If they can't come through for that, then what in God's name are we even doing? Noise interrupts my brooding. I know without looking up that it's my youngest packmate, Damon. Because Cassian never makes noise, despite being a professional hockey goalie who's built like a brick house. Damon comes shuffling into the room, wearing nothing but those tight briefs he likes so much. He scratches his sack and presses the heel of his other hand into his left eye socket, grunting. Morning, big ass. What's with the weird moisturizer sample? I blink at him, refusing to believe he actually ignores me this thoroughly. My phone starts up again. It isn't moisturizer. He shrugs, reaching into a cabinet and coming up with a box of chocolate breakfast cereal. Without bothering to find the bowl, he shoves a handful right into his mouth. Is it milk? He chews. Because I could use some. My eye twitches. I roll my lips together, trying my best to remember all of the parenting books I read 15 years ago, and their tips on how not to absolutely strangle spoiled, useless brats. Granted, the spoiled, useless brat is 26 now, and I've never really been a parent, just a pack alpha. But God help me, some days I wonder. True to form, Cassian appears from somewhere mysterious, fully dressed, without making a single sound, until he grumbles, "It isn't milk." He sits at the breakfast bar, 3 feet away from my sample cup, and pulls a paperback out of the interior pocket of his athletic jacket. I watch him, too infuriated by his apathy to even form words. He's Cassian, though, which means he sees everything without even looking at me. His fingers turn a page, the motion deliberately casual, belying the irritation underscoring his voice. I told you, I'm not doing that. I silence my phone again and repress the urge to strangle him, repeating my most common mantra where dealing with my pack is concerned. Control, control, control. Damon's posture stays loose. He looks at both of us, ice blue eyes wide. I have no idea what either of you are talking about. Cass and I answer flatly in unison, we know. Ignoring Damon, I focus on my stepbrother. We talked about this, I say, forcing calm I don't feel. Jobs, house, Omega, you agreed. His features don't even flicker. His eyes continue scrolling across the page in front of him. I agreed that it made sense. I didn't agree to do it. For fuck's sake. Damon's eyebrows push together. Omega? He drops his gaze to my sample cup. Oh! Oh, fuck! Was that today? I speak through my teeth. It's on the calendar, Damon. He turns toward the whiteboard pinned on the side of the refrigerator and frowns like he's never seen it before. Jesus Christ. I force an exhale through my nose, willing myself not to have a stroke. Did you read the calendar? Of course he didn't. This is probably the first time he's ever even looked at the damn thing. His shoulders pop up in a dismissive shrug. All right, shit. He flashes the smile that always seems to get him out of trouble and pulls his phone out of his underwear. Just give me 5 minutes to crack one out. I've got like 6 unopened nudes in my IG messages. Yeah, I bet. The worst thing is, for most guys, those messages would be the direct result of Damon's position as the star forward for the Orlando Timberwolves and the millions that come with it. But for him, not a problem. Damon's never needed a hockey career or money to get nudes. And now he has both. I'd appreciate the irony if my balls weren't so sore. I toss him the sealed, empty cup I found sitting on his bathroom counter. Here. 5 minutes. He flips his phone, flashing a whole lot of naked skin. With a chuckle, he strides off down the hall. I'll only need 3. I rub my palm over my forehead, muttering, he really shouldn't advertise that. Cassian turns another page, pointedly ignoring me. To the untrained eye, it would seem like he has no dog in this hunt. But I know him as well as I know Damon, and he's invested. Usually by this time, he's on his way to morning skate because, unlike Damon, he hates to be late. If he didn't want to be around us, he could leave now or go back up to his room. The fact that he's even sitting here in the kitchen means something. It took me a long time to learn that Cassian says just as much with his actions as most people say with their mouths. More on occasion. Like me, he rarely does anything random. And this is a message too. I don't want to be here, the book in front of his face says. But I care about what you want too, his ass in the stool adds. I sigh. Cass. He lowers the book, slowly revealing a scowl. The familiar expression stabs my center. I can picture a younger, surlier version of it on a younger, surlier Cassian, back when we lost our parents and everything went to hell. He's smart enough to play on my guilt by using the same expression now, because Cassian is easily the smartest guy I know. I could try to appeal to his conscience. That's how I got him to agree to this whole thing in the first place. After years and years of refusing to date, I only wore down his stubborn commitment to being a loner with guilt, specifically the fact that if he won't accept an Omega, we can't have one either. When he couldn't argue with that point, he agreed to make this one single contribution to the search process. A plastic cup of jizz. Hell, I'd settle for a tablespoon at this point. My thumb mashes my phone again, silencing yet another alert.
Cassian, this is important. I can't explain why, only that some indistinct sense of need has been prowling under my skin for months now, and if I don't find some sort of outlet for it, I'll go insane. Besides, this is a foolproof plan. Forever Matched is the most selective scent-matching service in the country. When their algorithm finds us an Omega with a high match percentage, I'll know for a fact that I've made the right call for our pack, even if Cassian hates me for it. Our gazes clash, his forest green to my dark brown. I shove a wave of dominance at him, flexing my pack alpha influence. Don't make me make you. With a mutinous glare, Cass sets his book aside. Looking like the entire world is pinned right between his wide shoulders, he lumbers over to the refrigerator and rummages for a moment before producing his cup. Filled up, marked with today's date. The bastard had it this whole time. He sets it on the counter without a word, snatching his book to make a silent, fuming exit. 2 minutes later, Damon flies back in, sliding on his socks, proudly adding his contribution to the lineup. What do we do now? He asks, watching me stare at the row of cups. We won't do shit. I will put on rubber gloves, pack up the samples, and take them where they need to go. Because someone has to. And I'm the one who does the things no one else will do. Turn it in, I say, striding from the room to answer my next phone call. When they match us, we'll have our mate. Numbers don't lie.
Chapter 4. Remy. I used to like the scent of coffee. Now, as I step back into proper coffee, after a quick 8-minute lunch break, the smell just makes me nauseous. Carefully covered with decenter, my usual baggy clothes, and an Orlando Ospreys cap, I edge around the cluster of suit-clad businessmen, muttering to each other. Several glares cut my way. My Omega quivers, a flare of urgency sending a bunch of odd sensations through my body. The presence of so many alpha pheromones, even when I can't smell them, makes me edgy and needy in the most humiliating way. I don't want to perfume for any of these strangers, but my body is dripping slick, and my pulse throbs between my legs. When I whine quietly, their boss scoffs and snarls. There's a line, in case you didn't notice. What I notice is my manager, once again, staring at his phone while customers pile up at the register. Ducking my head, I hustle over, doing my best to ignore the shooting pains that streak up the backs of my legs. I've been on my feet for another 8-hour shift today. At least I remember to have a granola bar this time. I'm beginning to realize that while I may be an excellent caretaker for friends, former roommates, and hapless fellow employees, I'm really not very good at taking care of myself. If I could afford therapy, that might be worth unpacking. I take a few orders before one particularly creepy alpha tries to reach over the counter and grab my arm. My manager finally steps in after that. Thank the Lord. I'm grateful the man didn't actually get his hands on me. That's the best part of working as a barista. There's always 3 feet of bar between me and whoever I have to deal with. And today, I need it. This is supposed to be iced. A splash of hot coffee splatters from a to-go cup as one of the investor's suited alphas slams it onto our service bar. I rear back, only narrowly avoiding a lash of steaming liquid to the face. The aggression in his voice sends a tremor down my spine. I shrink down a bit and pick up the offending cup, spinning it to read the label on the side. Our system prints the stickers out automatically when it rings up an order. Whoever prepares the drink just reads whatever the ticket says and fulfills it. Large lavender latte. It reads in clear block letters. The word iced is nowhere in sight, which explains the mistake. I didn't ring this up, which means my manager probably keyed it in wrong. No big deal, right? Wrong. A strike of alpha dominance has me close to hyperventilating. I can't even look up from the sticky floor. I have to lock my muscles in place so I don't hide behind the counter. I know you're probably not aware of this, but some of us have shit we need to do. The man sneers. We don't have all day to deal with your fucking incompetence. My shoulders hunch up toward my ears. I cringe away from his voice, the hostility sending me back a step. I'm sorry. I didn't know you wanted it, Iced. The sticker is wrong. See, here? With a shaking hand, I start to lift the cup toward him, turning it to display the label. Behind me, a coffee grinder starts up, blotting out the overwhelming whir of chatter and blend of strange, almost scents in the neutralized room. The jerk across from me rips the to-go cup from my hand and thumps it back onto the counter. What in the... Shock snaps my head up, nearly sending my Osprey's cap to the sticky floor. The lid pops off the top of the latte on impact, revealing a battered version of the foam smiley face I had secretly hidden inside the drink, and sloshing half its contents all over me. So much for silently wishing my customer a happy day. I don't give a fuck what your excuse for being pathetic is. The coffee grinder subsides just in time for me to hear him bark, "Remake it!" My legs tremble, absorbing the impact of the command. I choke back a fearful whine, my scent shifting. Luckily, no one can smell me under my decenter and the rich aroma of the coffee currently in the grinder. Because he barked instead of asking, I don't have any choice but to scurry away and remake the Alpha's drink. When I return, less than a minute later, he snaps the cold cup out of my hand without so much as a thank you. Not for the first time, I wish I were more like Meg. She would have called him a prick, poured the new latte all over his monogram sleeves, and quit on the spot. But I've never been any good at standing up for myself. And, even worse, I actually feel scared here. That never used to happen. I loved this job. Now it's just ruined. I lift the hem of the stolen hoodie to my face and use it to swipe at my wet eyes, mumbling to my manager about taking a break. He waves me on, rolling his eyes when he sees that I'm crying. Again. I've always thought of myself as a quintessential Omega in every traditional sense of the word. Meg fights parts of our designation, but I've never minded being softer and more emotional. Lately, though, I feel as pitiful as everyone seems to think I am. I'm on my second plate of toffee nut cookies before I stop sobbing. It's been a long day. In the midst of an even longer week, I was already strung out on anxiety and feeling generally overwhelmed before one of the new investors at Proper Coffee barked at me, telling me I was taking too long to fulfill mobile orders and causing the whole counter to get backed up. Faster, or I'll find someone who can actually do your job. Meg would have told him that, technically, none of this is my job. I was hired for a position that doesn't exist anymore, making the homemade baked goods we used to sell. I'm too afraid to speak up, though. What if they decide I'm not worth keeping now that they've decided to peddle stale, generic pastries instead of mine? Instead, I took every knock their boss threw at me, hunching and lowering my eyes every time I was barked into submission. My quivery nerves eventually gave out, though, and I wound up choking down whines and swiping tears out of my eyes for most of my shift. It was a relief to get home and have a proper breakdown, but even an hour spent crying on the floor of my closet nest isn't enough to make me feel anything other than terribly alone. I haven't stopped thinking about Meg's thinly veiled offer to sign me up for a scent matching service. The fact is, I need to find a good pack as soon as I can. My suppressants won't work forever, and the thought of having to go back to a heat clinic terrifies me. As much as I wish I had a fairy tale like Meg's, most packs are not scent sensitive like hers. Of the ones who are, even fewer meet by chance. Most use scent matching companies, and Forever Matched is the best of the best. Am I crazy to turn this offer down? Should I get over all of my silly hopes and dreams and face reality? Or is that settling? I hate being my best friend's charity case. Before I turned 18, my whole life was trash bags full of donated clothes, Christmas gifts given to me by church charities, treats passed over by strangers with pitying smiles. I don't know why this feels so similar, but it gives me that same clench of humiliation in my gut. Embarrassment that I'm in this situation in the first place, and heartbreak that I know exactly why. The fact is, finding people who want me has always been hopeless. I mean, it sort of makes sense. My own mother surrendered me at birth. If she didn't want me, what use is it trying to convince strangers to take me? Still, I spent years spinning plates on my nose, doing everything I could be lovable to the families that considered me. Nothing ever worked. And the only alpha I've ever had a connection with made it clear I was firmly in his friend zone, and barely there at that. Thankfully, my body never had a chance to betray my attraction to him. The same day I found the sweatshirt in front of my door, my designation came through, and I was promptly rehomed to a facility for single omegas without family or guardians. Meg was my roommate. Sometimes I wonder if the universe knew I needed a distraction, and the reassurance that there were, in fact, more pitiful new omegas than me. The poor girl didn't know anything about our designation. I leaped at the opportunity for a new mission to divert me from my misery. Projects were one of my many coping skills I honed over the years. Sometimes I feel like I have dozens. See a happy family walking down the street and feel a pang in your gut? Sing a happy song to yourself. Need a way to get through holidays when you have no one to spend them with? Try that new baking technique that will take hours to perfect. Feeling lonely and depressed in your new apartment all by yourself? Paint the walls pink. Trying to forget your mortifying crush on a hot, almost alpha and the way his borrowed hoodie made you perfume for the first time? Give the new girl a lesson on slick-absorbing panties. I pulled my borrowed, stolen, sweatshirt over my face, huddling down into it, pretending it's a blanket and not a relic of all the things I used to think I could have. How much longer am I willing to live like this? And what happens when I can't do it anymore?
Chapter 5. Damon. There's a moment at the beginning of every game. The lights go out, the music swells, and some disembodied voice says, "My name." It shouldn't be me. I shouldn't be here. But that's the thing about me. Even when every odd is stacked against me, I'll make it. When I realized I hated living with my biological parents, I somehow charmed my way into people's houses for a weekend, a summer, a semester. When I realized I'd never pass my high school classes on my own, I happened to date smart girls who helped me get by. When my grades still weren't good enough for college, and I had to find some other way to make money, well, thank God I was good at hockey. Better than good. Because here's the other thing about me. I'm lucky as fuck. I know. My parents were assholes, and I was poor, and my grades sucked. I'm talking about after all that shit. Or maybe because of it. I don't know, but sometimes I wonder if the universe finally noticed how much horse shit it had dumped on my head and decided to level things out. How else do you explain the fact that in the midst of all my high school couch surfing, I somehow wound up becoming friends with Cassian? He had been playing hockey all his life, starting back before he lost his parents, and he was the one who recognized that I had the ability to play too. It was the first thing that I ever won an award for, the only thing. Because the more I played, the better I got. Just in time for the major league scouts to pick me up. Which happened about a year before hockey took off in the U.S. See? Lucky. It was all pure good fortune, including the part where I had Cass's big, grumbly ass to keep me in line. It's always been like that with us. I can't see 3 feet in front of me, but Cassian has an eye map of the big picture projected in his frontal lobe at all times. I run around doing whatever gets me hard, and Smith spends his whole life making lists, as if the minutiae of his daily to-dos will actually fucking change something. But Cassian, he just knows what's what. It's how we became friends in the first place. We were always the first two freshmen in our high school's gym each morning. He was there to work on his muscle mass. I was there to get free hash browns from the lunch lady. It didn't take long for us to figure out we were basically polar opposites in every respect, except for one. We both wanted to be athletes. Cassian was methodical about it. He worked from a set regimen of exercises and a specific high-protein, high-calorie diet. When he wasn't working out, he had a book in front of his face and a grumpy scowl covering whatever the book didn't. Meanwhile,
I like to skate by the easy way. A charming smile, a well-timed joke, some flattery, some vague reference to plans I'd never actually pursue. Whatever my training lacked in planning, I tried to make up for with enthusiasm. It helped that the gym was the one place where I actually felt successful. I could always do another lap, another rep, another workout, even when the other guys were about to pass out. And don't get me wrong, I play hockey. I love a good fight. It's fun getting my hands dirty and absolutely pummeling the shit out of my opponents. But Cass is built different. His determination and rage come from a totally different place, and he's in control of it. Until he isn't. And then, God help you. The guy I'm matched up against in our season opener reminds me a bit of my silent but deadly packmate. I've never met this dude before, but he's glaring at me like I fucked his girlfriend. Which is a distinct possibility. Especially if she's a puck bunny. Because Lord knows, I've hit that shit in every city from here to Seattle. Hell, who am I kidding? Canada too. My opponent skates backward as I fly down the side of the ring, closing in on the goal. Our latest recruit, another forward, sails down the opposite side of the ice. He's older than the average rookie, but still young enough for me to feel old as shit every time I think about it too hard. The kid has a basset hound's name, Gunner, but he can fucking play. With one eye on the shot clock, I pick my moment. At the last moment, I flick my stick and send the puck flying straight across the rink. He slaps it. The flashing buzzer sounds as the clock runs out. Fuck. Yes. I bump shoulders with the defender who's been glaring a hole in my helmet, shooting him a shit-eating grin. Good game, bro. Which is probably stupid, because 2 seconds later, we're both on the ice, pounding each other's faces through our gloves. Cassian hauls me back by my jersey and shoves me into the boards. I hear Gunner laughing while my packmate mutters, "We won, Damon. For fuck's sake." I let them tow me to the edge of the ice and pull me into the tunnel. Then I tug my helmet off and swipe at my split lip. Motherfucker. Smith will be so mad if I have a black eye and that matching service thing he calls us in. If they ever call us in. The odds Cassian spat at both of us made the whole thing sound like a pipe dream. Although, like I said, I'm extra lucky. In fact, this whole thing is very on brand. If anyone is going to find their soulmate from a cup of jizz, it's me. At this point, I'm not sure what's scarier. The idea of actually finding our Omega, or the implosion Smith will have if he can't check this box off. He's obsessed with that shit. It started when he was 17 and their parents had their accident. He thought organizing everything into a list was the best way for him to get his shit together and take care of Cassian. It wasn't that simple, obviously, but he never let the damn thing go. Even when the list changed and grew, forming sublists and side notes, didn't matter. He just worked harder, did more. Once he got his degree, he expanded his company. Once the company expanded, we made more money, and he had to learn about using it. Once he had our account secured, he started in about property. That led to our new house, and 2 years of renovations, none of which ever got finished. Now he wants us to have an Omega? For what? So he can add 10 new lists for all the shit he or she will need? Poor bastard's just chasing his tail, if you ask me. I mean, no one did. But still, it's ironic. Smith's been beating his head against the wall, trying to get Cass on board. If he was looking for an ally, he could have just asked me. Most of the women gathered around the locker room entrance are betas, cloaked in scent sprays meant to mimic Omega perfume. My dick perks up with a lazy sort of interest, and I almost roll my eyes. Come on, Big D, you know this isn't what we really want. To be fair, I don't know what we really want. I just know that every girl bouncing their titties at me looks the same somehow. None of them actually do, but they do, you know? Jesus, I need a shower. Gunner is more than happy to scoop up all my chips. He flashes them a grin and offers a cowboy's gentlemanly nod. It matches his accent, Evening, ladies. They eat that shit up, which is fine by me. I got my shots in and we won, so, you know, let the new kid eat cake. Or pussy. Whatever. Mathers! That would be Coach Raleigh, ready to hand me my balls for that scuffle after the final buzzer. Which is fair. My eye is swelling up already. We'll have to get ice on it to make sure I can still play in the game we have in 2 days. If I can't score for us, I'm basically useless. To the team and my pack. It will be fine, though. Like I said, I'm a lucky bastard. Chapter 6 Cassian. Do not disturb. Whoever invented that feature should be given a Nobel Peace Prize. Truly, name one thing that's brought more actual peace to the modern era. With my phone silenced, and Damon already crashed in his room, sleeping off Coach's shouty ass-kicking, it's a perfectly quiet Thursday night in our pack house. Smith is out, somewhere, at the office, working probably. God forbid he stop and look up for half a second. I wonder what he's so afraid of finding if he does. With a sigh, I step out of my nightly shower, leaving my spent cum and mild disgust to slither down the drain. If it were up to me, the daily stroke-off session wouldn't be a part of my routine. Doctor's orders, though. Professional athletes aren't allowed to take rut blockers. Apparently, for those who also aren't sexually active, unchecked alpha hormones can build up and increase the odds that a random omega would throw us into rut, which sounds like a nightmare for them and me. Instead, I spend every night standing under the steamy spray of my shower, roughly gripping my dick and knot while I imagine a set of much softer, gentler hands. At least it's over. For now. The whole house is half-finished, maybe more like one-fourth finished, but I finally have a towel rack and a bathroom mirror at least. Grumbling under my breath, I swipe my hand through the condensation, fogging it. Appearances are more Damon's thing. Still, I glance at my reflection, feeling obligated to at least check it occasionally, just in case I've actually become the beast I feel like on the inside sometimes. But no, I still have a straight human nose, a scar sliced over my left eye, a clean-shaven chin with a cleft in it, no forked tongue or fangs. My hair is probably too long, though. Smith always mutters about it, saying it's no wonder everyone on my team calls me Beastly. I got the nickname halfway through high school. When I think about the way I acted on and off the ice, it was probably deserved. I keep most of my frustration to myself these days, beating the punching bag in our home gym to a pulp, running for an hour every morning, doing sit-ups until I can't breathe, doing my lonely jack-off session every night because I literally have to. Jesus. If any of my opponents spent half a minute in my head, our defenders wouldn't even have to block them. They'd just run away screaming. Not that I really care. It's been years since I felt attracted to anyone, including Omegas. Even then, every one of them somehow left me more agitated and unsatisfied than I was before we met. They all chafed, too stiff in the collar, too tight over my shoulders, a pinch at my inseam. Eventually, my alpha sort of gave up, grunting in annoyed distaste any time someone brought the subject up. It's hard to get an exact read on the instincts, but the impulses feel a lot like, really? This mediocre shit? As if he just can't be fucked to pay even a speck of attention to, you know, an alpha's biological imperative. I've read every book on the subject, but none of them offer any answers. I didn't reject my mate or get rejected. Those are the only documented reasons for alpha apathy. So I decided to keep my issues to myself and let the guys have their scientifically matched omega, because I might not be the most charming guy, but I'm nothing if I'm not a team player. Every alert on my phone agrees. The screen lights up the second I switch airplane mode off, filling with a string of notifications. Half of the alerts are texts from teammates. They're all nice enough, congratulating me on another shutout. A few have links in them. They all lead to similar articles, videos, and social media posts. Raised by wolves, one jokes, along with a picture of D pummeling the shit out of the opposing team's defender. It's a play on words, since whatever idiot named our team chose the Timberwolves as our title. And now, according to this Sports Network article, are these wolves rabid? The Orlando-based Timberwolves, poised to be one of the wild-card contenders in this year's NHL playoffs, seem to be in need of some housebreaking first. Star forward Damon Mathers is pictured below, engaging in a little after-game grudge match with one of the league's top-rated defenders. Mathers may be a veteran player, but his unsportsmanlike behavior is less like a Timberwolf and more like an untrained puppy. Speaking of rookies, the Timberwolves recently signed a new forward to train under Mathers. Coincidence or careful planning by their team staff? Either way, Gunnar Sinclair, 22, is now contracted to the Orlando hockey team for the next 3 years, which may be a problem for their veteran star, whose contract is set to expire at the end of the season. Fucking media vultures. Perpetually trying to make petty drama where none exists. I swear to God, they stand around the hallways after games and listen in, or one of them is sleeping with someone on our staff. With the way the rest of the team is managed, it wouldn't surprise me. Not much does anymore. I'd probably be more pissed if I were actually worried. Maybe it's the apathy that colors everything around me in shades of gray, but I can't find it in myself to get it up for this either. For one thing, Damon is one of the best players in the league. Our pack is the only reason he's on the Timberwolves instead of being off with a more elite squad. He wanted to go where we could both get contracts. At the time, he was a better player than me. Selling us as a pair was more like selling him, but with an added goalie bonus. My stats are some of the best around now, and as the years have gone by, Damon's gotten more reckless, less professional. His penalties alone are ridiculous. But he scores when it counts. He wins games. And, more importantly, people love him. If this comes down to some sort of popularity contest between him and, well, anyone, Damon would win. We probably have nothing to worry about. And the more I scroll through the articles, the more I think they're all flash, no substance. Just social media proving once again that it's the scourge of society. Turning away from my mirror's foggy reflection, I tug on the first t-shirt and pair of sweats I find. Picking them out of a pile of laundry I'm fairly sure is clean. Smith would have a fucking coronary if he knew I don't put any of my clothes away. But I don't think I can remember a time he's ever come in here. We each have our own rooms, which is a luxury I'm still not used to, after years of sharing rooms and sleeping on cots. Maybe that's why I chose the smallest one. The house has six. The largest is huge and attached to a nest, clearly meant as an omega suite. None of us have dared to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Which means, if we get an omega, he or she will have some serious work to do. Smith took the primary bedroom, situated on the opposite end of the long upstairs hallway. He has the most space and the least amount of stuff, so basically, an empty serial killer clean room 3 times the size of mine. Damon took the bedroom just at the top of the stairs, in the center of the hallway. Right in the middle of everything, of course. It also happens to have the largest attached bathroom, apart from the Omegas, plenty of space for all his skincare and manscaping needs. I picked the one between him and Smith, though their locations didn't really factor much into the decision. Truth is, I wanted the bookshelves built into the walls, and the small balcony across from the entrance. The room is probably meant to be a study of some sort, because it has two whole walls of shelving, complete with creaky, sliding ladders I won't ever need, being well over 6 feet tall. I suppose, if we actually finished renovating the house, we would eventually refinish everything in here. As it is, the wooden built-ins are as faded and scuffed as the oak floor. The balcony doors stick, tacky from a dozen coats of gloppy white paint over half a dozen decades. And the ceiling is a craggy off-white that collects sinister shadows in low lighting. The room is tired and neglected, with just enough potential to make it sad. Perfect for me, actually. In this house, it's a collection of torn-up, hollowed-out spaces that don't really fit together, which might just be perfect for all of us.
Chapter 7. Remy. My ride pulls up to the front of Forever Matched with 5 minutes to spare. I smooth my hands over my lap, grateful that the silky pink fabric of my dress hasn't wrinkled. My hair is just as smooth, the black curls straightened and recurled into perfect loose spirals, partially clipped off my face. Along with my usual makeup and the bright smile I've perfected, I hope I look like a girl eager to set up her future. Because I am, I tell myself. Who even knows whether I'm lying anymore? Meg's voice echoes in my ear, slightly distorted by my broken old AirPods. Are you there? What does it look like? My stomach is a jumble of jittery excitement and nauseous dread. When I peer out at the imposing white office building looming over me, fear edges out the thrill. It's, big. That's what she said. Megara Ash. Remy Skies. I smile despite myself, gathering my cardigan and purse. I'll call you after. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, she chimes. Like going home with a group of alphas I don't know? I return, teasing her. I would never. The call clicks off as my Uber pulls away. I blow out a deep breath, staring up at the impressive facade in front of me. What on earth am I doing? One moment of weakness, and now I'm here? A girl should never make decisions while she's sitting on the floor of her closet, wedged between a plate of cookies and her vibrator collection. The Omega urge to run and hide kicks and thrashes inside of me. Years of people-pleasing and a pathological fear of disappointing anyone are the only things keeping my feet rooted to the sidewalk. I made an appointment. I can't just not show up. Thankfully, the second I step inside, it's clear this place was made for Omegas. The lobby is a small round alcove. Flowering plants and overstuffed chairs fill the dome-like space, giving the room a cozy feel despite the bright sunlight filtering through its skylights. The second I enter, 10 different scents hit me all at once. A prickle shivers over my skin while I adjust, my mind racing to catch up to the adrenaline blasting through my veins. All right, no neutralizers in here. They want alphas and omegas to scent each other.